Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. Appreciate each of you for tuning in. We got a dope show, another one for you today. We got Chris Sanders, Run TMC. I want to get into just some of his offseason memories. I know it was 1986. Just kidding, Chris. I know it was a few years ago, but I still want to get into just how he handled the offseason. We got to see Tight End University. We'll talk about that a little bit. I got Parker Kelly here. And he was at all the practices, OTAs, mini camp. So he got to see Cameron Ward, Will Levis. I want to get into that. And you know what? I think it's about time we talk a little bit about the rushing attack. So we'll wrap it up with the rushing attack in the final segment. But let's kick it off with this Cameron Ward and Will Levis. Just, I don't even, I guess you could call it a competition. Truth be told, it's very much skewed in Cam Ward's favor, rightfully so, right? Because we know what happened last year. It was a total train wreck. And Brian Callahan is from here. I got to do better, or he going to be like Magic Johnson. I ain't going to be back. You know, I ain't going to be back. Right? So we know that's the case. So that has to happen. But you look at the way the reps are going, Parker. So you have Cameron Ward. Ward to do four, like 3 to 4 reps, right? Levis comes in 3, Ward comes back and does another 3 to 4. And then you got the rest of the guys, right? Brandon Allen and Tim Boyle. What do you make of just that equation itself?
Well, if this is a quarterback competition, it has to be probably one of the most skewed in recent history because, I mean, everybody knows who the starter is going to be week one. As far as the reps are concerned, I like how the Titans are doing. I like how Brian Callahan's doing it because it's like you said, it's like Cam Ward's going every other. Like he'll come in for 3 or 4, then Levis, then Ward comes back in, and then Allen, Ward, Boyle. So I like how it's set up because it's getting Ward as many reps as possible but still getting the rest of them reps too. But – I think it's pretty fair to say that Ward, since he hasn't taken an NFL snap yet, needs the most reps so that he can – and if he's going to be the franchise quarterback, he needs to get as familiar as quickly as he can.
That's the great point right there. And I think that's the million-dollar point, in fact. You have a quarterback that you got to get ready. Yes, you don't want to just hand it to him. The Bears did that last year, right? They just handed the job to Caleb Williams. The results, you know, gradually it got into – somewhat of a success as far as his individual numbers and things. But you remember that first game against the Titans. It was like, wait. Caleb Williams, this is like that Space Jam, right, where he got zapped of his powers.
Yeah. What, he had less than 100 yards passing
yes,
for that game?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and I was thinking to myself, this isn't the Heisman Trophy winner.
Right.
Southern Cal, is it? But, yeah, I mean, just got to get Cam Ward as familiar and as up to speed as he possibly can. It sounds like on his own that he's watching a ton of film and it sounds like he's all dialed in on football. So that's really all you can ask for. But yeah, it's kind of, you know, just getting him up to speed as fast as humanly possible.
So if you're Will Levis, how do you attack this? Because I let's get that first and then we'll talk on how Will Levis has attacked it. How do you put yourself in his shoes, right? And how would you attack this whole situation?
Well, I've been in his shoes before, not at the NFL level, but I've been in his shoes before. And to be honest, it's really tough because this is a guy that was – I mean, there was basically no competition whatsoever this time last year. It was Will Levis's job.
Yep.
And it was Will Levis's job a majority of the season until, you know, Brian Callahan made the decision to go to Mason Rudolph. Will Levis had the shoulder injury, all that. But it was basically Will Levis' job. Then he pretty much knows it's coming. He sees Cam Ward get drafted number one overall. The only thing that he can do is exactly what Brian Callahan has been telling the media that he has been doing, is putting his head down and going to work. Because there's no rule against getting better. And that's all Will Levis can do at this point.
I love the point. There's no rule against getting better. That's right. Just because they drafted your position number one overall, that doesn't mean you can't get better and make it more difficult. And I love the fact that's what he's done. What's so interesting to me, Parker, is we know Levis is a guy. He wants to please everybody, right? And he wants to do well. He's a perfectionist, right? But at the same time, he knows his opportunities are limited. So the thing I want to really see if he could balance is, okay, I know my opportunities are limited. Every snap is like the Super Bowl for me. And it should always be that way, but it's amplified now. How do I keep from pressing? How do I keep from, okay, you know what? Maybe not take that shot. Let me just go ahead and check it down to this safe throw and let's get the first down and keep the chains moving. That's what I wonder.
And really, I think that part is all mental. You know, Will Levis has the physical tools, but it's really the mental that he struggled with most at points last season. If I'm Will Levis, I'm putting my phone on Do Not Disturb. I'm deleting social media for the summer. I may even delete it for the season. I'm not thinking about what anybody else is saying. Yeah. All I'm focused on is how I can get better, how I can improve. And, yeah, Cam Ward's going to be the guy, but you're going to have to take it from me. And
right.
That would be my mindset.
I love it. And, you know, that for the most part is the mindset that he's adapted, right? You went out and those reps. I remember the one I think it was day two of minicamp. He came in after Ward and three straight completions. And they were all like really good throws. Remember the drop shot to Bryce Oliver on the left side?
Yeah.
On the back shoulder.
And didn't he make a check before that too at the line of scrimmage, or is that?
Oh, that was the last. Now yes. And that to me, it goes back to something that he said. And I said, wow, you know what? There's something going on up there. It's clicking. He talked about being in the same offense for the two consecutive years for the first time. I mean, remember this guy going back to sophomore year at Penn State. I mean, he's been in a different scheme every year, right? But he talked about being in the same offense and now being able to take it to the 300 and 400 level of it. And that was a great example, right?
Yeah, and you put in your story, it was his sophomore redshirt freshman year at Penn State where he literally had to learn a new offense every single year until this year. He's finally in the same offense. The only difference is Cam Ward's here. And, you know, so there's only so much space in your head for all this, all the playbooks that he's had to learn over the years. So in Will Levis's defense, like that's really tough.
Yeah.
But there have already been glimpses of how being in the same offense for the second straight year has helped him. I mean, you just brought it up, the Bryce Oliver play, making a check at the line of scrimmage. There have been – I thought he had some of the best throws of minicamp so far. I believe he hit a corner, was it to Elik Aomanor?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of, you know, made all of our jaws drop on the ground.
Mm-hmm. So, that was coming towards us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I said, oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, one of the best throws of minicamp, if not the best. So there have been glimpses, and it certainly has, at least, you know, from a 50,000-point view, looked like it's helped.
And this is the thing that he also has to make sure he does, and we touched on it, right, the not pressing part. Go back to, I almost said freshman year. Go back to his rookie year. Remember the game at Pittsburgh, right? And it was a fourth down. You had Traylon Burks isolated. It was 3-by-1. Burks was the one on the left side. You had Joey Porter Jr. on him. And the alert was immediately, hey, go route. We're going there. You get one-on-one covers. There's no safety over top. We're going there. Because, you know, the safety had to be concerned about the three receiver side. Right, and on the three receiver side, you had the tight end stay in the block, Chig, and it's funny because they run a similar concept to this now, where Chig kind of like releases out and he angles back in, and then you got the receiver, in this case it was Kyle Phillips, is running like a short route underneath the angle. It's almost like the Texas route concept, but just shifted to the left or to the right rather. And that was open. Phillips was open, you know, and if he dumped it to him, that's a first down. They continue to drive, whatever, whatever. He went for the deep shot. A progression for Levis is to take what that defense gives him in that situation, and in this case, live to see another series. While, yes, that alert is something you definitely want to look at, but more importantly, you want to make sure – obviously, you want to score, right? But more importantly, you want to make sure you move the chains and give yourself another chance. That's the progression that I think Levis needs to be.
Yeah, and I'll even the Tampa Bay game that the same season, his rookie year, it seemed like if the Titans would go down by two possessions, Levis would try to get all of that back mm-hmm. with one throw. Mm-hmm. And you just – you can't think like that because an NFL game is long. It's, you know, three and a half, 4 hours. Like, it's – just keep moving the change. And that's really all you got to do. They're not – they weren't asking Will Levis to be some superstar, like, or else he would have got drafted, you know, been a top five pick. You know, that would have been the expectation. But, yeah, that was probably – the biggest thing, especially I think back at that Pittsburgh game too and the Tampa Bay. I mean, it was like, all right, we're down by 17. Let me try to get it all back with one throw. And it would just
– yeah.
Those types of mistakes all the time.
And it just digs the hole deeper. Let me ask you this. Because Levis has played well. Of course, it's minicamp, it's OTAs. Make of it what you will. Cam Ward has played well. What if Levis plays better in training camp? What do you do if you're the Titans? Like, is there a degree of separation where it's enough to say, hey, you know what? I know we drafted him number one, but Mr. Ward, Levis is playing so well. We got to go this route. Is there a point of separation where it could work out that way?
I'm talking like if from the fans' perspective, if that happens. There would be riots in the street. But let's say even if it's neck and neck, obviously it's going to go to Ward. Mm-hmm. And I'd say if Levis does slightly better than Ward, I'd still give it to Ward. But if Will Levis is the starter day one of the regular season, it has to be like a huge, ginormous gap between Cam Ward. That's because Will Levis has shown glimpses before. And look where that had the Titans, picking number one overall. It has to be noticeable.
Yeah.
It has to be noticeable.
I agree. I just wanted to see what you thought of that. And honestly, there's almost no point where I could see that happening. But let me ask you this also, though. What could you see from Ward to make you say, you know what? It's not so much the competition with Will Levis that he's losing. It's the competition with himself. It's the competition with the transition from college to the NFL. What would make you say, okay, you know what? We're going to pull him back a little bit. Because, you know, there's people out there that say, hey, man, like you can't start him. You could ruin him. What would allow that thought to creep into your mind?
That's a tough one because I like what I've seen from Ward so far. Like, I don't think I'm ready to say he's going to be a top five quarterback mm-hmm. or he's going to suck. Like, I've liked what I've seen.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Like, what would you have to see to be like, I don't know, man.
The last day of minicamp, he had, you know, those two picks and throwing, you know, rolling to his left, throwing back across the middle. If those continue,
yeah,
that's when those thoughts would probably start to creep in my mind if I see more carelessness with the football.
And here's the thing. He's a guy that typically doesn't make the same mistake twice. But that's a mistake he made twice, right? Throwing back across his body. And we know that that's something that happened in college. It's really going to come down to those plays when they happen because that's the gift. Like, it's a blessing on one hand. But it's a curse on the other because it's like, okay, you're so good you could do that, right? You're so good you could avoid Femi when Femi Oladejo beats J.C. Latham. You could avoid Femi roll to your right and throw backside to Chimere DK for like a 6-yard gain on 3rd and 5, you know what I mean, in that period. Live to see another series. But at the same time, you do that and you're like, oh, I could do it. I could do it. I could do it. And then later on, a day later, right, you try to do that, and instead of just throwing it away, you throw it backside, Cody Barton, interception. And then you do it again, and this time Davion Ross, interception. Two in the same practice.
And that's why, like, I'm okay that he made those mistakes because he learns. Okay, yep. And I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Yes, Cam Ward typically doesn't make the same mistake twice. I'll just say he made it was the same day, the same periods of practice. Like, I'm fine just kind of putting that behind us. But that's just the Cam Ward experience.
That's the Cam Ward experience.
It's like gunslingers. Like, that's the true definition of a gunslinger. Brett Favre played the exact same way. I'm not comparing him to Brett Favre. Please
right.
don't
no,
flip
I
this,
get
you know?
Exactly yeah. what you're saying.
But Brett Favre played the exact same way. So, you know, I think the plays, the Superman-type plays are going to happen more often. I still think those mistakes will happen. I just would like to see them happen less.
Right, and that's the big thing. You got to kind of take the good with the bad. And unfortunately, that's the bad that comes with Cam Ward at times. But, I mean, remember, what are you at? Seven interceptions only? Something like that. So it's not like a whole lot, but – I mean, obviously that number could be different because I'm sure there were some that should have been picked off and weren't, et cetera, et cetera. But you mentioned the word gunslinger, and you mentioned how, hey, get it out of your system now. And I think that's the big part. And he even said it himself, you know, when he talked about the interceptions. he made the joke that, you know, maybe it was a good thing because Cody – I'm glad I threw it to Cody because he's on my team. You know what I mean? But you look at it. He said, I don't really care about interceptions. At the end of the day, it's how you respond to the next play. You're either going to win the game or you're going to lose the game. It's the only two outcomes. So I just think as a quarterback, you have to continue to motivate yourself and the guys around you when things are going bad. I mean, things are going bad, so we all are going to have mistakes. Receivers are going to have a drop. I'm going to have a pick. I'm going to have a fumble. Going to give the ball away. And that's really what it boils down to. And he just said we got to play complementary football like we've been doing during camp, try to translate it to training camp and then towards the season. I think that's really the bottom line.
Simple as that. I honestly don't have anything to add. I mean, it is exactly just simple as that.
And then just to pull a little bit more, he said you either throw a lot of touchdowns, you throw a lot of picks, and so you got to weigh your object. I think the biggest thing is measuring the wins. The quarterback position will always be judged off of wins. So I'm just trying to win a lot of games in my NFL career, try to put my team in the position to give them the best case to win a lot of games. And the thing I love is the confidence, right? And this is something we talked about before, so we won't get too far into it, but my confidence is at a 10. It will never be at a 4 or 5 because he was asked, you know, what would take to drop it, and he said, yo, it'll never be at a 4 or 5, and I think that's the right approach.
Yeah, and I love the confidence because it's so easy to be overwhelmed, I can imagine, as a rookie, you know, stepping into a new environment, a new city, new faces to the media that are constantly asking you questions, new teammates. I can imagine all that is very overwhelming, but Cam just continues to have that kind of, you know, even keel mindset the whole time. And you got to love that.
Yep.
You got to love that.
So, like you said, at the end of the day, I'm a gunslinger. I live by that. So, it's going to be cool watching this all play out. I definitely believe that whoever comes out on top, likely Cameron Ward, is going to be the best option for the Titans, and we'll see. Brian Callahan obviously needs tremendous results in order to keep his job. So we're going to go ahead and keep it moving, hit this break. We'll be right back with Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Yeah. Go ahead, let that music fade. Dim the lights. And now, for your Boston Celtics, starting at power forward, standing at 6 feet nine, 240 pounds, out of Villanova, Ed Pinckney.
And now, starting with a single, just got paid, Johnny Kemp. You remember that song,
shoot,
do you?
I remember the video, shoot. Black and white. He's walking around in a trench coat.
Just got paid. Had the twisties in the chick.
Friday night.
They don't know that. They don't know that, man. Shoot,
that's
man.
Old
What's
school.
Going on with you, boss?
Nothing much, man. Over here roasting in this heat. I tell you, we're in a little bit of a heat wave, but it's all good, man. No complaints. I'd rather it be warm than cold, so it's just fine. What about you?
Yeah, man, it's hot as fish grease out there, man. It feels like I'm in Kenya.
Hey, man, tell me about it. You stand out there, boy, yes, I feel my head cooking.
Whew. Man, I remember when we had camp in Houston and we had it at Trinity University. Dude, let me tell you something. I went from weighing, and it's a true story, I went from weighing like 183, and I left weighing about 161, dude. Hey. I came home and my ex-wife was looking at me like,
she thought you encountered something else out here. Oh man, cut that
oh
out!
My
cut
God.
That
yeah.
out. Well, speaking of the off season, I think that's something we should get into. I'm curious for you because, right, this is the time where guys take vacations and things like that.
Yeah.
We just had tight end university, which I got to go check out briefly. Let me say this. Off topic real quick, Travis Kelce never ceases to amaze. This is the third time I've watched him go through route technique and everything.
Yeah.
And every time I come away like, wow. I'll send you the video of him going over the top of the route stuff.
Okay.
But anyway, a lot of guys are on vacation at this point in time because, you know, there's only so many months out of the year where you could do that.
Yes.
This is a time for it. But tight end university was here at Vanderbilt University.
Mm-hmm,
and Gunnar Helm was the only one there. Josh Wiley wasn't. David Martin Robinson wasn't. You know, Derek Abney. Who else? Chig Okonkwo. None of those guys were there, but Gunnar Helm was. Do you make anything of that, or is that just it's cool?
No, I just think it's really cool that if you can go and improve your technique, because there's some things you can learn. I mean, like when I first got in the league, I knew how to run routes, but I wasn't an expert at running routes. So once I got around Webster Slaughter and Haywood Jeffries like that, those guys taught me how to run routes. So now when you're going to these camps and you're doing those things, you're mastering and getting better at your craft. It's kind of like this. Just imagine, you know, with Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is the best golfer of all times, right? But he still had a swing coach. The reason why he had a swing coach, that even though he was great at what he does, there was still some things that he can get better at. So when you know, you have different, you know, guys going to these camps, you can learn some from a Kelce. You can learn some from these guys that are pro bowlers. Okay, man, just imagine if I got a little choice route, I can lean on them and lie with my eyes a little bit, and it can take your game to a whole different level. So I think it's really cool that guys are there, but if guys don't go there, they're missing out on something that could help them in their route running.
Yeah, and you're right, because Greg Olsen was there also. We know he was one of the – oh, man.
You talk
about learning how to move – the defender, as
Ooh.
Soon as you take that first step, you know,
he was talking about
if they're off and you want to go inside, he's like, yo, you got to release to his outside shoulder and get him to commit, right? And you release to the outside shoulder, and then you crash through with violence, you know, talking about like that in the rip with your inside shoulder as you condense him, right? And then just talking about exploding out. It was really dope watching. And he was talking about getting vertical, right? Getting vertical before you make your break, you know,
Absolutely.
To threat vertically and then make your break and that subtle push off. These are things, Isaiah Likely going over route technique about immediately eating up that cushion if they're off coverage and making that defender uncomfortable right away. Like, these are things that you can pick up, to your point. I like that. But is it really a huge detriment to not be there?
It's not a detriment, but it's some things that you can put in your arsenal. I mean, if I know that I'm going to have something that's going to help me, then I'm going to go there. I'm going to give you a perfect example. You know, I remember Chris Dishman. He taught me some stuff that, man, I was like, what? And he was a defensive back. He told me this, and this really changed my game. He said, Chris, I'm on my spot. He said, I'm trying to get leverage and try to stay on my spot and stay in front of you. He said, if I lose the leverage and get off my spot and you stack me, he said, I'm in a panic mode.
Yeah.
He said, I may not say it. I mean, I tell you it, but I'm panicking.
Yeah.
So now I'm watching what you do at the top of the route. So if you lie with your eyes and be a salesman and make them think something's there that's not there, he said, I lose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting chills. That's why my game went to a whole different level. Because once I understood that I'm going to get some of the best corners in the league, like Daryl Carter from the Kansas City Chiefs and went to the University of Tennessee. When Chris Dishman told me that, oh, my gosh. My game just went to a totally different level because I watched. It was the funniest thing. I ran a post against Daryl Carter when he was playing against the Kansas City on ESPN. Is I ran a post. I took a quick inside release, and I started to lean. And if you can watch his body demeanor change, he's like, oh, my God. Gave him a head fake, touchdown for 46. So those are the little nuggets you can take, man.
Yeah,
unreal.
It's amazing how much you are in control when you stack that DB. And it's so crazy. You got him on a string, man. You turn your head, he's going that direction. It's crazy.
But see, a lot of receivers don't know that.
Yeah.
Because we focus so much on schemes, but we don't teach the technique.
Right, the individual technique to really amplify the schemes. But I think, you know, it is a bit detrimental for these guys not to be there because, like you said, you 100%. Pick up the points. What did your offseason look like? How and then spin it forward to now. Like, how do you think the offseason should look? Let's just go. You break camp, mini camp, June 15th. You're back in a little over a month. How should that month go?
You know, you want to work and then play. And I'm gonna say when I do this, the one thing that I did is I knew my family wouldn't wake up till about 10. So what I would do is I would get up at 5:30, I would go lift, and then I do my sprint workout, and then I'm done before they get up, and then it's all family time. Because now you're working and you're playing. Because the thing about it is, if you worked hard before you left camp and then all of a sudden you don't do nothing for a month, you're gonna lose everything that you work hard for. So guys have to understand, as a professional, yes, I got family, yes, I gotta go to church. All those things are very important. And number one, but you still got to find time to prepare, because if you go into camp unprepared, they're going to, you know what the NFL stands for? Not for long. You're not going to be there. So they just got to understand it. So what I did is you got to come up with a game plan to be like, okay, guess what? We stay up all night. My family, they wake up at 10. So what I do, wake up at 5, lift my weights, run. Then I'm done at 9:30. So now it's all family time. So that's how you plan it.
How much did you incorporate sleep into? Because, I mean, that's been a huge thing the last 5, because you said stay up all night. That's been like the last 5 years or so. Like, it's been a huge uptick on that.
It is, and it's important. And I wish I would have known that, because sometimes it's the weirdest thing. Sometimes before the game, I would be tired because I didn't get enough sleep. And back in the day, the only sleep that I really got, just kind of being honest with you, is when I would take my kids to the amusement park and they gone, and I'm sleeping on the bench. You know, that was my sleep. So if I would have known better with nutrition, better understanding the sleep, then I would have did a little things better. Because if you look at like Eddie George and, you know, Derrick Henry, those guys never miss games is because they got rest and they made sure their body was okay. And I just wish I could have implemented that more in what I did, because I didn't know. We think if you sleep that you ain't working, but if sleep gets your body ready to perform. So if I'd have known that, I would have been better in getting more sleep.
So when you look at Cameron Ward, he was asked if he's going to gather the guys. He said he wasn't sure, whatever. Mm-hmm. Will Levis, he had the guys in Cabo. Actually, we were in Cabo at the same – actually, around this time last year. I was in Cabo. They were in Cabo. We weren't together, but, hey, we're in the same country, city even. So,
yeah.
Cameron Ward, Calvin Ridley, Chimere Dike, Alec Iomanu, you know, Tyler Locke, all these. What could they get out of spending that time together? If they did?
I think it's I think it's really, really cool. And it's not that they're going to be running, you know, full speed routes, but I think you can help in the communication issue. And when I say communication issue is you want to make sure the wide receiver and the quarterback have the same eyes. So you know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. if we're looking at a certain coverage, or we're looking at, you know, when I plant my foot back and come back on the comeback where I want the ball at, because if the quarterback and the receiver have the same eyes, you know, and have the same verbiage, then they're going to be on the same page when camp comes. Because if you look at when Cam was get up at 5 in the morning, right, and getting with the receivers, look at how good they did. Look at how well they did. Look at how they recognized coverages. Look how they were making plays. Why? Because they saw it before they did it. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing here is you're going to see it before you do it. And I think it's so important to get these receivers. You know, you don't have to run the whole route tree and, you know, just run the route, but then talk to your quarterback. This is where I want the ball. This is what I'm thinking. So if he thinks that, when you go 7-on-7 when camp starts, then now you're going to see, you know, your dividends come to pass.
Do you think coaches should, like, behind closed doors, like, encourage that?
You can throw a little bug in their ear. You know, because you don't want to be like, man, it's just football. You don't want to be like, man, if y'all got a chance, make sure y'all call each other. And you know we got technology now to where, say, if cats want to watch film, you can do Zoom. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Have Cam be out there and be like, okay, man, hey, today, man, we're not going to go out and run routes. Let's just break down the 7-on-7 we had the second day. Okay, hey, Calvin, this is what I'm thinking on this post. You know, Restrepo, this is what I'm thinking on the choice route. Or Van Jefferson, when you run that dig route, this is what I'm looking at. So now you got all eyes looking at the Zoom. So now you get into 7-on-7. Actually, when camp starts, now you're going to be above the curve.
Yeah, and that's going to be important. Because as you know, yes, right, typically defense, they – always start faster, right?
Yeah.
It just happens that way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's going to be interesting because, man, it's – I know, you know, we're in 7-on-7, but I like what I see, man. I really, really do. I mean, I like the composure. I like the confidence, and I just like the attitude that he brings. So, you know, we'll see. How many games do you think they win in?
I'll say 5. I think 5 or 6.
I'm thinking maybe 7 or 8.
You can, wow. Okay, so let's get into that.
Yeah.
Brian Callahan as a rookie coach, mm-hmm. 3-14. Mm-hmm. We know what it yes. looked like. What sure. gives you the belief that Callahan could help this team get to 7 or 8 wins?
Okay, I'm going to ask you 2 questions. What was one of the worst positions on the team?
Offensive line.
They improved. What was the second? Quarterback. And I say that respectfully. I'm not putting them down. But if you look at some of the games like the Chicago game, the Green Bay game, the Jets game, those are games they should have won. But what was the difference? It was a quarterback play. So maybe if the quarterback protects the football and not throws a pick six and not makes a bad play, now you go from those 3 wins to maybe 7 wins, 8 wins. Because there's some games that were left out. That's what kind of gives me a little bit of hope.
It's really interesting to me how – that Bears game, they win that game. I wonder what direction the season goes.
That's what I'm
you know what
seeing.
I mean? It's yes. very interesting because we saw. Well, I mean, they beat the Dolphins in Week 4, but then they came back and the Colts said, "Hey, you're still at the bottom of the division." But still, yeah. just that when things went right for that offense, it seemed to be solid. But that first couple drives, and this is what I said on Stillman's. Mm-hmm. On Power Hour last week, the first couple drives always seem to go well, but after yeah. that, it's like all of a sudden. Why do you think that is?
It was just momentum, and I think that it really shifted when they got that punt block in the Chicago game.
Or even I'm just talking about overall in games. Like they always, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
if you notice, like their first couple offensive drives.
Oh yeah.
It looks
oh
good.
Yeah. I think that me personally, I think that, you know, when Will Levis came out, he started off with confidence. But once he made that one mistake, he went back into Levis mode. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? To where I'm staring down receivers. I'm looking down. I'm not looking off the safety. I'm not looking, you know, the guy that's playing the whole player. You see those things like that. Because when you start off and you start off good throwing a touchdown, oh, this is great. Then all of a sudden you feel a little pressure, get sacked, or you feel a little pressure, or you almost throw an interception. Then that's when Levis mode came in and made the mistake. So they did have some good drives. And you're like, woo, they're about to burn it up. But then all of a sudden he makes a mistake and then he goes back into Levis mode.
It's funny you say that because I had a story on Levis post on Wednesday And it was just about him attacking the offseason with a starter's mentality. But one of the things that he said that really intrigued me was he obviously acknowledged that that last year wasn't good. You know what I mean? Yeah. He acknowledged that. But he said, one thing I learned the hard way is there's no way to play your best ball if there are other things you let affect your mental. The mind space I was in those 20 weeks was not me. I wonder if that early struggle, like that early mistake to your point, put him in a bad mind space.
Yeah, it is. Because you, when you, it's like this. It's like, just imagine if I drop, drop 8 balls in a row, but then all of a sudden I get in the game and I catch 3 in a row. But then on that 4th one, all of a sudden I drop it again. Now you revert back with that mindset. Mm-hmm. Man, can I do this? Can I catch? Can I play this game? I mean, because now you start doubting yourself. But the other 3 catches were the bomb. But that 4th one puts the doubt in your mind. And we always talk about, and this is what gets me mad a little bit. A lot of people don't even know what mentally tough means. It means that people think that mentally tough is, I got to grab somebody's face mask together. No, mentally tough is overcoming the obstacles, overcoming the adversity. That's mental toughness.
Yeah.
Mental toughness is not mean how many jerseys you grab, how many face masks you grab, how many people you cuss up. That's been an idiot. But mental toughness is saying, even though I dropped the ball the 12th time, the 13th one, I'm going to kill you with it. That's why Brett Favre was so good. He'll throw 27 interceptions or 28, but on that the 29th, it's going to be for the win the game. That's mental toughness.
Man, you got me looking around waiting for the basket to come my way, the offering or something, because you preaching.
No, it came at it because CD, I've been through that, man.
Yeah.
You know, I've been through that where the doubt started to come in your mind to where, no disrespect, but they drafted Kevin Dyson and they brought Yancey Thigpen. So now you start down like, man, I cannot play this game. I made the all-rookie team. I averaged 23.5 yards a catch, but then they get on ESPN and they say they ain't got no receivers. What? Mm-hmm. So now you have to mental toughness and say, you know what? This is what I had to do. And I heard a sermon one time. It said this. It says you got 2 choices to get better and get bitter. So what I did is I had to turn my feelings off, and I said, guess what? I'm going to play so well that y'all going to have to play me. And the funny thing about it, they were going to trade me, but they couldn't trade me because I was killing it in preseason. That preseason, I had 6 touchdowns in 2 games.
Ain't no more that need to be said. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up on that note. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you, Doc.
This is Ben Jones. I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. That's the Far Side Running. It's only fitting we have that. And we got Ben Jones, a guy who was an architect of the rushing attack quite some year. Well, not quite some year, 3 years ago or so. He's retired and just living the life. But I want to get into the rushing attack for this Titans team. And Brian Callahan, he says something pretty interesting towards the beginning of OTAs, just about wanting more balance in the rushing attack. We know. And Tony Pollard had a career high. I think it was like 260 carries. Like, that dude was toting the rock a lot, right? Career high, 1,079 yards. But the season finale, Tajay Spears had 20 carries for 95 yards, both career highs for him in a single game. Callahan said he wants more balance. And the balance and watching the workload, he said that's going to help both of these guys stay healthy. And we know that Pollard, we know, went through it. Like, to the point where Callahan, he got a little emotional talking about Pollard. Obviously, you know, it was also after the win against the Patriots, 1 of 3 wins. But you got that, and he got Tajay Spears, who, again, showed a lot of promise. You've seen these guys at OTAs and minicamp. Granted, look, they're in shorts and T-shirts, right, helmets. So you can only make of it so much. But at the same time, they look pretty quick. They look pretty spry, if you want to call it that. They show some explosiveness. What do you think about this adjustment as far as, like, to the dual-headed monster?
It's been my thoughts exactly watching these guys. I remember watching Tajay Spears for most of his career at Tulane, and I'm like, this dude is an unbelievable athlete. Mm-hmm. Like, can catch it out of the backfield, can tote the rock. I mean – why I just don't I'd like to see him more. I'd love to see Tajay Spears more. I feel like, you know, he's a third-round pick. You need to get the most out of that. And having him get more carries only helps the longer end of Tony Pollard's career. Like, he might add more years to his career, you know? If Tajay Spears is helping carry that workload a little bit where Tony Pollard doesn't have to be the workhorse, I'd love to see much more balance from the running back room this year.
Well, here's the thing, right? If you look at – so next year – so this year Pollard is a 8.47 million to the cap, right? His cap hit next year is 9.2 million. Dead cap is 2. They could save $7 million by cutting him. So I'm Tony Pollard. I'm like, yo, I don't know that I want to do this dual-headed monster thing, but I'm a team player, so we'll see. But I need my numbers. You know what I mean? And that's what's so interesting about this, and I didn't even think about it until I saw Easton Freeze from A to Z Sports. He had a story, and it talked about this. And I said, wow, you just kind of just like, oh, well, you know, he signed, he's good, no issue. And then, of course, you got Tajay Spears on the other hand, right, who – you know, this is going to be his third year. Entering year 4 next year, right? You need to be in a good situation. Obviously, as a third-round pick, there is no option, fifth-year option, but still you want to be in a good situation to prepare yourself to make some money if need be. So I'm curious how that balance – both guys are saying the right thing, but I'm curious how within – how they're, you know, looking at it.
Yeah. I think Tony Pollard, even if Tajay Spears' workload is up just a little bit, I still think if there is a year 1 to year 2 noticeable difference with Brian Callahan calling the offense, if Tajay Spears is able to get more carries, I still think Tony Pollard can produce at a high level. Mm-hmm. If this offense is supposed to work how we are led to believe that it will. So I still think Tony Pollard will still get his numbers. And I think, again, that'll take pressure off of Cam Ward, and it'll make everything more balanced. And we may not see some of the same problems that we saw last year.
And that's a key thing in the whole equation, is being balanced offensively and taking pressure off of Cameron Ward. And so you look, right, Pollard, you look at his carries. Like I said, it was like, you know, like 260 last year, right? So him getting 260 carries, let's say you take 60 away. And, no, was it 260 carries? I may be mistaken. Let me just check this just to make sure that I'm on point here. But regardless, Spears, he had 85 carries last year, right? So let's say you boost that up to about 150, you know, and you take, 260 carries. So let's say you boost Spears up to about 150. You take that 60 from Pollard. Like, those are snaps that can be found. So you could have that balance. But I think for Pollard, the key, because you look at 2022, right? That was the year. You know, that was the final year that he was in the committee backfield with Ezekiel Elliott. 193 carries, 1,007 yards, 9 touchdowns, but 5.2 yards per carry. 21, 5.5, right, on 130 carries. That's the thing for Pollard. He needs to get those opportunities, but maximize them with the yards per carry.
Right. And on paper, the Titans' offensive line should be better. Now, we have to see how the chemistry is able to gel, because Kevin Zeitler has been very limited in what he's been able to do this offseason. And you got to consider the left tackle's new. He hasn't played next to the left guard. Lloyd Cushenberry was injured last year. He's playing next to a new right guard in Zeitler, and then you're flipping J.C. Latham over to right tackle. So there's a lot of newness, but the production, at least from guys like Zeitler and Cushenberry, is there. So hopefully this offensive line is able to gel at a higher level, way higher than it was the last two seasons, and that'll help Tony Pollard where, okay, he sees a hole, he's able to get through the hole, a burst, get, what, five yards or more?
Mm-hmm.
And that type of stuff helps.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And those are the things that have to fall into place. And if it does, I think they could be in a good spot. Another thing that's important, because we talked in the opening segment about Levis, how he needed to check it down sometimes, right? Get that first down on third and five instead of going for the 30-yard pass. That's something that will help provide more opportunities for the offense, right? More snaps. They have to find a way to generate more snaps. I will venture to say that they were towards the bottom of the NFL in offensive snaps run per game. I will venture. I'll look it up while we're talking. But I think, you know, that is something that has to get fixed, because that's one way to give yourself more bites at the apple. We know this team needs to score more, and one way to score more is getting more chances.
Yeah, and now that you say that, the defense was on the field a ton, mm-hmm. a ton last year, and the defense was really doing all that they could do. But when they're on the field as long as they are, at some point, you know, they're going to get tired, they're going to get weary, and then the opposing offense is going to get a big play. And that happened a lot. Lots of three and outs last year for the offense. That type of stuff can't happen again. It's all about balance, right? Like, the defense was on the field way more than the offense, it seemed like, without even looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
It just seemed like the defense was on the field way more.
No, and you could definitely see it. And you look at the – yep. So they were on the field. The plays per game offensively, they were 23rd. Tied with the Saints, 23rd in the league, 60.7%. 7% of the plays were offensively. So, I mean, I'll let you know right there. So they do have to get it together. One way to make it better is by running the football. So I wanted to just touch on the rushing attack. And obviously, you know, Julius Chestnut, Khalil Mullins, those guys are still there too. So we'll see how that competition all works out, even for the third back. So definitely a good opportunity once again to talk shop. I appreciate each of you for tuning in. Shout out to Chris Sanders for coming on. You made the show as well, Parker. Definitely continue to rock it out, and that's what we'll do. Check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.